Oh, Michael?
Yeah, this is
Laird?
Michael.
Hi.
Hi.
Time no here.
Yeah, it was just a couple of days.
Right. How's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good. I'm healthy.
Yeah, that's the important part.
We had our first three cases announced last night, Michael.
Yeah, we got a big outbreak over here. There was a woman that died. And they linked her to like a bridge game. Like she'd go play bridge like Thursday through Sunday. And that like had like a big, like everybody that went to that game has tested positive, and now all their loved ones are being tested. And
It's really insane. There was a guy that was on a bus on his way to Buffalo, and he was not feeling well. They stopped in Rochester, which is like the next decent sized city over before Buffalo, and he came off and he was diagnosed as it. It turned out that that's what he had, but of course everyone else on the bus went to Buffalo. So now they're trying to locate everyone that was on that bus.
Yeah. Because it, I mean, what people don't realize is billionaires are canceling things that make money because they understand how serious this is. Like,
Right.
it's not like, people are saying it's the flu. No, the flu is contagious, but it's not like this.
And
And
not
it
only
does.
that, but you get it fairly quickly and you feel so crappy, you tend to not walk around and spread it to a lot of other people.
Yeah. So this one can ma stay in your system for a while before you get any symptoms.
That's right.
And then it lingers on forever, and then it can manifest itself like nothing. So you could be a carrier. Like they did a study. Like there's a certain age group, and I can't remember where it was done, that doesn't seem to be infected. Like they get symptoms, but they're like mild.
Yeah, well, like
And then
kids
like
are
everybody
barely
over
getting it at all.
50 is like
Yep.
having it bad.
Yeah. Like my
So.
kid, like kids 10 or under, they're barely having any symptoms at all if even if they get it.
Yeah. It's crazy. It really is. I wish I was in a job where I could totally social distance.
Yeah.
I mean you have to go get supplies. I mean that's one thing.
Right.
But other than that, you could so be a, do social distancing at least until this gets a little better. We're on the upward slope, not on the downward.
That's right. Yeah. And I mean the social distancing, this is like, my dream come true. I mean, I have to stay home by myself and just read comic books?
Yeah.
Where's Christopher today?
He didn't reply, so I assume he's out and about. Like I didn't see him reply to our IM.
Yeah, he said that he's joining.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he replied this morning, first thing this morning.
Oh, I didn't know that. Let me go look.
My comic books came yesterday. Did
Yeah, I saw that.
you get yours?
No, I'll get them
Ugh.
tomorrow or Tuesday. I don't care.
I know. You've got plenty that you're going to read anyhow.
I'm not even re.
History of the Marvel Universe. I'm like, what is this doing in here? And did I order it by mistake? So I checked my order and I never ordered this thing.
But I can't believe you don't want it.
Because if you know what? You would appreciate it much more than I would.
That thing's amazing, though.
I
Like,
don't feel like reading it again, so it's just going to sit on my shelf. I read the individual.
no, but Rob, that is an incredible reference. Like, the amount of data in that thing is incredible.
Well, then you should just say thank you.
Well, thank you, but I think you're nuts, man. Did they accidentally put it in your order or what? Yeah, I love. I wasn't gonna reinvest in that because of the size, but God, I'll take it.
Okay. And
Yeah.
you know what I did? I made a mistake though on my order. You know the Flash 750?
Yeah.
I got all of the decade issues except for the 1970s.
Well, at least
Apparently,
you.
I forgot, and I checked the order form, or I mean, checked my original order, and apparently, I forgot to click 1970.
Yeah, I did that with the Wonder Woman ones. I just glad you got the 40s one
Oh, it's
because
beautiful.
that's the important Jay Garrick.
Oh, I love it. And Nicola Scott. Oh my God, it's beautiful.
Chris, are you there?
Yep.
Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm glad Rob was on top of things because I didn't look at to see my phone. I didn't see your response that you were joining.
Okay.
Yeah, so Rob's the savior.
Yep, that's what I'm often called.
You know those Flash covers though, my favorite is the Jay Garrick. Like
Too.
I could do without all the other covers personally.
A couple of the other ones are really, I think, are cool looking, like
Yeah.
the maybe 50s or 60s one. I forget which one it is. I don't have them in front of me, but I mean, so I mean, they're nice, but yeah, the 40s one is, I think, just
Yeah.
amazing
I
by far.
stopped doing them all after Flash. Like
Me too.
I didn't
Me
do
too.
all of Robin and all of Catwoman and all of
I
Joker,
can't.
but I
You're
did.
talking a, like almost $100 each time.
Well, I kind of like the 40s through the 60s. Like that's like when they have the retro, like when they have Wonder Woman in the dress and stuff, you know, like that's the kind of thing that I like.
Well,
The
you know
only
what I'm gonna do? I'm ordering on DCBS, just, you know, in the bundle, so it's the main cover. And if there's any particular covers that I think are really cool, then when I go to the comic shop, thank you. When I go to the comic shop, I'll just pick up, you know, one or two covers if I think they look cool.
Yeah. You know what it sounded like when we recorded the other night? You know that weird noise that would come in every now and then?
Yes. Yeah.
It almost sounded like somebody's beard was hitting the mic.
I don't have a beard.
I know, I don't either. But I'm just saying, that's what it sounded like. Like if there was this scruffy beard and you
Yeah.
had your mic out here and the beard was like touching it.
I
That's what
think
it
that it was
sounded like.
coming from Kirk's microphone. I mean, whether it was actually him doing anything, I
Kirk
don't
has no
know. But
beard. I don't think
yeah,
he's ever
he
had. I don't
doesn't.
even know if he has has ever had facial hair.
But it seemed to be coming like when he joined, I first heard the noise, and then it came back later.
It sort of went away after a
Yeah,
while.
then it ended up going away totally.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is not the coronavirus podcast. This is the Geek Brunch Retro podcast, and we're all here.
First time in months.
Even Chris came in last minute and said, "I'll be there." Probably
I
'cause he's
think
social distancing.
it, yeah, this is my only socializing.
That's right.
Yeah, there you
So
go.
as the Aftershock Central podcast would say, we're going full Voltron today.
Yeah, it's I think it's been 4 months.
Since we were all on.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it was
Same.
me and Chris, and then me and you, Rob, and then now we're together. And we don't record every other week. Sometimes we miss a week.
Yeah, this is great. I'm very pleased.
Yeah.
So, Chris, how have you been?
I went really different for tonight. Like,
Did
really
you?
different.
What about for this morning?
I mean, I forget I usually record at night. So,
Yeah.
well, no, I don't. I usually record in the morning. Sunday's my only, like, for sure. Sunday morning's my only for sure recording time. Everything else is the variable. But it was hard for me to pick something this week because I went on like a New 52 kick where I wanted to read everything New 52. So it's like,
I saw you read a lot of Batwoman. Batwoman was pretty good back in
oh
the day.
yeah. The thing I liked was it was Andrako who does like Manhunter, and oh my God, when Scott Collins only came on for half an issue, and I'm a Scott Collins fan, mostly from The Flash, but I have a bunch of commissions from him. From the Freedom Fighters, And when he drew Nocturna, I was like, oh my God. There was like this page splash of her like laying down. And I was like, that has got to be the sexiest Nocturna I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And
I'm a
she's.
sucker for Nocturne just because of the, when she first appeared in the 80s.
Well, she first appeared, she was a scientist. Now
Yeah, she was an astronomer, right?
she's like a black widow.
Yeah.
She's like she'll marry these rich guys and they end up dead, and she's like in a vampire. So it's different, but it was cool because it had like the Marvel what is it called? The Demon Knights kind of vibe towards the end.
I don't remember.
It
I'm gonna have
had
to go back and read something.
Clayface, it had Ragman, it had the demon, it had yeah, just had it had her sister Alice. I mean, it was really good. And then I finished World's Finest, the one that was the Power Girl and Huntress.
Oh yeah,
And that one was weird because it ended those two like getting back to Earth 2, which was devastated by Darkseid, and then it switched to a flashback story, and that flashback story was awesome.
Yeah.
It was like the origin of Earth 2 Superman and Batman with their origins are really different. Like they're totally twisted. Like Jor-El knew the Krypton was gonna explode, so he built a rocket to like re-energize it, and it actually decided it was gonna blow up because of it, like immediately. So he accelerated it,
Wow.
and then there was that apocalyptic chick that comes, working for Darkseid, and she shows up in her boom tube. She'll say, "I'll save Krypton. Give me your firstborn son." And they said, "No way, Jay." So they just launched everybody. Kara and Kal-El and the other guy, which is on the Earth 2, Superman, all into space at the same time. So yeah, I don't know, its origin was cool, and then how twisted Thomas Wayne was before he got a shot of, like, this isn't right. Yeah, it was so good. It blew my mind how good it was. Like, I was like, I didn't want it to end. And it was a flashback scene told through Lois Lane, who is now Red Tornado because she died.
I
So
forgot about
it's
that.
like, oh my God.
That series was insane.
Yeah. I mean, that's the mood I'm in right now. So I was like, what am I gonna do? What am I gonna do?
Yeah, it's funny seeing those tweets and finding out what you never read.
Yeah, well, it's pretty easy. You can what I did with a lot of DC is I missed a lot of the later part of New 52, and then I jumped back in with Rebirth, but I missed all those issues in between.
In
So
between, yeah.
there was you got to remember, well, I read all of Convergence, and so Convergence led to Rebirth. But before that, there was the DCU, and the only thing I really got caught up there was Black Canary, Batmite, and Bizarro. Those were the only ones that I read with that short burst of DCU. But I don't know. I just love DC. God, it could be any. Somebody asked me the question on Retro. They were like, "What's your favorite decade?" And I was like, "For DC, I don't have one. Every decade is my favorite decade." Because I just love the history, and I love the roller coaster ride, and I love them to change stuff up, and I'm looking forward to this generation thing, whatever it turns out to be. I know they're gonna
Yeah.
pull back on a lot of it, but the fact that they're using King Faraday and like Wonder Woman to like revamp the DCU, like what's happened first in
Yeah.
chronological order, I'm like really excited.
The new solicits don't have the next issue, the next one shot for some reason.
Oh, maybe they like canceled it.
I doubt it. I doubt it. I think they're gonna still do it as like a separate event, but like without it impacting every single comic, but I'd be interested to see what it is.
Yeah. Three
Hopefully.
Jokers is coming too. Wow.
Yeah. And did you see that Metal Men is delayed? They delayed in the rest of Inferior 5 by even more.
And those are like two of my favorite books, because like Metal Men is awesome because it has like all this like obscure. Same with Inferior. You got the Tasmanian Devil. Like, how obscure is that?
Yeah.
You got that stupid little thing that used to hang out with Space Ranger. I mean, it's like, what is this? Brother Power the Geek. I mean, it's just like this is gold. I mean, it is gold. And Metal Men is doing the same thing. Like, it really has like this continuity vibe and a link to things. And they're
Oh,
really
yeah.
obscure references, and
Well, you and
I
Kirk
just
covered
eat
up,
that
the
up.
first few issues, and that was, I mean, it's been a great series.
Yeah, those are my two, and they're delayed. And then my other favorite, which has not stopped, like, it's just the best comic book. It's probably my best monthly comic book is Lois Lane. It's the one
Oh, yeah.
I just can't stop
Well, I
reading
think we
that.
talked about that before. They,
Yeah.
I mean, if they made that a regular series or like an annual, like it doesn't have to be like all the time, but if they, after this is over, take a few months break and then he comes up with another story. I mean, I would love that because this is amazing.
Well,
It's it.
it's like New 52. I mean, not 52, the weekly, like the Rucka parts with the question, like
Yeah.
paying respect to all of the question, and then having this great underlying theme of Lois and this mystery of being a reporter, and then tying itself into what's happening in Superman. It's just it, and
Yep.
it has a Checkmate vibe, and it's very linked into Leviathan. So
Yeah.
I don't know how he does it. I don't know if he like calls people and says, "Well, what's happening? Are you doing this? How's this?" But it feels like old school DC. It feels like it's ingrained like in the DC universe. Well, in what's happening with Bendis and Leviathan, and at least with Bendis. And then it's got the Rucka vibe. Like Rucka when he's hitting on all cylinders, oh my God. And then the Ep it's Epting, right? That's drawing it. Oh my God.
Yeah.
The funeral scene, I was in tears because I just went to a funeral and I'm like, how the fuck does this guy know how to pan the scene? Like he just panned it like incredible. Like I'm like, oh my God, I felt like I was back at the funeral. Like looking at all my loved ones, and it was like, holy moly. It just was a punch to the face.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I can totally see that. Whether you've just been at one that, it hits you in a different way than if you hadn't been.
Yeah, that's enough new comics. Let's talk about old
Yeah,
comics, but
have no idea what you guys are talking about.
yeah, you're missing out on
Lois
some. You
Lane
will in ten
is the
years.
maybe, or I'll still just be reading comics from the 80s.
That's right.
In 10 years, I'll have forgotten what I read now and need to read it over again.
That's true. That
That
does
happens to
happen.
me from month to month.
Yeah. Doesn't take long.
It's easy for me to forget the minute or the average stuff. I still remember the things that are the fantastic. Like
Major.
if I rate a 5 out of 5 or a 4 out of 5, I usually remember key things. If it's just on that borderline where I just like it and I'm on to the next one, I don't remember shit.
Makes
Actually,
sense. 10 years from now, have used all our comics for toilet paper.
Oh my God.
I
Same
won't.
with
You, I'll get install a bidet before I do that.
you.
I'll soak my ass in the tub. I'll use
Yeah.
whatever I
Just
can
take a
do.
shower every time you
Yeah,
poop.
that's right. I'll just poop in the shower.
Stacy had the nerve to say something about that we could use it to get fires going as kindling. I'm like,
Oh,
are you kidding me?
Barb said the same. She says we're
Oh my
set in
God.
terms of keeping warm, and
That's what she said.
yeah, using
With
toilet
our wives?
paper.
Don't they know us? Trying to push our buttons, Mike.
Yeah.
That's
So,
funny.
since you haven't been around, Chris, why don't you start first?
I mean, I wasn't here last week, last time, but I was here the time before.
Yeah. But
But
you were
yeah.
here away the longest.
That's true. Sure. All right, I'll start with Fury of Firestorm.
One of my favorites.
Me too.
Number 62. So this is this is after John Ostrander took over.
Yeah, he's an elemental, isn't he, at that time?
Not yet. This is still
Okay.
pretty early on, after he took over, so hadn't made that change yet. This is like this is where
Oh, it's just right before. I mean,
Yeah, it's not long. I mean, like, trying to see how many issues he had done at this point. I mean, it's maybe like 6 months after Legends, or maybe a little bit more than that. Ostrander. Yeah, so he's been on the book for a little bit, but he hasn't done the elemental thing yet. That's still a little so ways on.
Well, it's not far from where you are at
Where?
62, 'cause the series ends at 64 and then it changes its name.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it just changed to Firestorm the Nuclear Man
Yeah.
instead of. But it just drops the Fury of part, but I mean, it doesn't really end. It kept going, the numbers. It actually ended with issue 100.
Not to interrupt, but you know what, Rob? I just found out I'm missing annuals 1 through 3. Son of a bitch.
A firestorm?
Yes.
My God. I just completed the whole run of that about maybe last year.
But you know how I said I was skipping out on annuals because I was like, ah, oh, this is one of them. Damn it, snap!
Chris, you're
Well,
making them itchy.
You did it
I
again,
have an
Chris.
ability to do that somehow.
No, it's because I go look at the cover you picked, and then I'm like, I find out I'm missing something, and it
Digging
gets me.
around, yeah.
And then I have that weird OCD. Like, Rob has his own OCD. He has to read in alphabetical order. He has to do. I have one where if I'm missing something, I just get itchy. Like, my hands start itching, and I'm like, why don't I have that in my collection?
Yeah, that's a psychological issue, I think.
Yeah. Gotta fill the holes. That's what I'm all about.
Yeah, this so this issue was like I said, written by John Ostrander and with pencils by Joe Brzozowski. Actually, Dick Giordano did the inks. And the story is called "To Regain Tomorrow." It starts out with a little, I guess you could call it a prologue, but it's not. It's a prologue to I think, later events, because it doesn't really come into play for this issue, where it's in Russia, and there's a man named Mikhail Arkadin, who was a nuclear technician at Chernobyl. But he's like a flaming skeleton. After there was a reactor blown, and an older man smoking a cigarette in a trench coat and hat, comes up and talks to him, and then he seems to be from the Russian government, that they've been waiting for him to regain his senses and takes him away. So it's just like the first four pages. But the rest of the story concerns Ron Raymond and Professor Martin Stein. And this is where Professor Stein has found out that he has cancer. It's metastasized to the brain. They think it originated in his lungs, probably. But Ronnie is picking him up from the hospital because Stein insists on leaving. they've given him some medication to control the seizures he's going to be having because of the location of the tumor. There's not a lot that they can do for him. Ron picks him up and he takes him home, and Stein reveals to him that he has a plan for the amount of time that he has left, that he is very concerned about the inevitability of nuclear war, and he wants to do something about that. So Ronnie is on board with whatever he wants to do. So they form Firestorm and head out, and Stein directs him to go to Kansas it is first. He phases into a missile silo, a huge warhead, nuclear warhead, and he does something to distract the workers that are there, so that because he has to become material to use his powers to do what he's going to do, which is basically, like, Stein tells him to change the warheads into something else. Doesn't really matter what, just some kind of inert material. So he changes them all into lemon curry.
Nice.
And then they go to the Atlantic Ocean out east of the Bahamas, and they go underwater and find a Russian nuclear sub patrolling the outside of the States. And again, Firestorm goes immaterial to go inside the sub, but as he's doing that, Stein has a seizure, and because they're Firestorm, it affects both of them. He starts losing control of his powers. He only just manages to phase into the submarine before they're split into their two selves. They find themselves at gunpoint from the Russian soldiers that are on the sub. But Ronnie kind of goes on the offensive, does a little bit of bluffing, pretends that they don't know themselves how they got there, that they got hit by some beam of light and ended up there, and kind of like blames it on them and says, you know, I've seen James Bond, I know what's going on. And he starts talking about how they better be careful because Superman's going to find them any minute now and suck them out of the submarine. And so they lock them up, and basically Ronnie said that to give them some reason as to why they're going to disappear, because once they're behind locked doors and have recovered, they can reform Firestorm. And so they quickly do the same thing to the Russian nuclear warhead on the submarine. This time, Ronnie changes it all to caviar, and then they that's the end of their little disarmament mission. Partially because they want to be careful about Stein having another seizure. And then the last scene of the story is there's a meeting in Reykjavik, Iceland, where leaders of the Soviet Union and at the time Vice President George Bush have been meeting to talk about an arms agreement that they have been trying to work on for over a year, so that they but it hasn't been going well, and the news reporters suspect that the press conference is being called to announce that they are calling off talks, and sure enough Bush starts to talk and says that that they haven't found a way to come to an agreement, and that's where Firestorm floats into the room and takes over the press conference, basically. There's kind of a funny little scene where after this happens, George Bush says to one of his advisors, "Well, doggone it, I was promised my own press conference. How am I supposed to get the nomination if I can't show how statesmanlike I am? I mean, darn." but yeah, so then over the next few pages, Firestorm, basically, Ronnie reads a statement that Stein prepared, and he makes a speech saying, "I've watched you try to come to an agreement to get rid of nuclear weapons, but no one seems to know how, and I do, and I've started already." And he tells them what he's done to the two warheads, and they show you some panels of the governments in America and Russia confirming what he's done. And he says, if this doesn't motivate you to disarm your weapons, I'm giving you 24 hours, or at this time I'm going to detonate all the warheads. And as it's going on, you see Amanda Waller on the phone with the president. She's being asked to devise something at Belrive to hold Firestorm, and then that they have the Suicide Squad on standby, and then but he's asking her to add someone to the team, and she's strongly advising against that. Whoever it was effective against Firestorm. She said sure, but they were effective against most living things. He also calls General Ealing, who is, you know, connected with Captain Atom. So, I mean, Firestorm flies off, and he and Ronnie and Stein have a conversation, and you know, the whole thing about detonating the nuclear weapons is a bluff, but it ends kind of Ronnie says, Stein's thinking that the leaders will be thankful that they don't have the burden of making this decision and that they can just go ahead and disarm. And Ronnie's a little more cynical. He says, if there's one thing he's learned from his history classes, that his history is mainly made by national leaders doing stupid things. So there's a statement that that can resonate across the ages. But yeah, it was an interesting story, interesting action to see a superhero taking. You know, Ostrander brought a lot of like current events and current concerns to his writing, especially like early on from what I've seen. He obviously was writing Suicide Squad, which had just started recently at the time as well. So interesting to see him kind of pulling them in, but it makes sense. But it's interesting to see, you know, not long after Legends, Firestorm making these big national or not, but worldwide affecting events, and seeing the United States government planning to like mobilize against him. Sort of muddies the waters about, you know, good guy, bad guy kind of thing. So I thought it was pretty interesting. I know it was a contentious thing, at least for Jerry Conway, to have the book taken away from him, and he wasn't real crazy about the directions that Ostrander went and the things that he did. But
do you know why he was taken away? I didn't know.
I'm not sure. I think they just wanted a change.
It's hard though, because that's his baby, you know? I mean, from the ground up, so.
Right. So I think no matter what.
Yeah, he would have not liked it. Anybody is doing. It's like, I created this character and now it's in somebody else's hands. I mean, if I wanted something in somebody else's hands, Ostrander would be my top choice, because when I think Firestorm, I think Jerry Conway, but Ostrander, I always think Suicide Squad, Spectre, even the Manhunter series that he did. But he did contribute a lot to Firestorm. I just often forget the tail end.
Yeah, definitely a different take. He you know, wasn't afraid to make his own mark, do his own thing. So, but yeah, I think anytime, and then that was, you know, nowadays a lot of creators are hesitant to create. If they have a really good idea for a character, they're going to publish it independently because they don't want to lose it to one of the big publishers. But, you know, back when he created Firestorm, that wasn't as much of an option.
Except lately we've been getting a lot of DC new characters that are awesome.
How successful have they been, though?
Oh, speculator-wise, they've been real successful. Punchline has been a $40 book, and it just came out. And then Kiss of Death also boosted up Lois Lane sales. So there's been quite a few of new characters popping up. Even in Marvel, Marvel's had quite a few lately. Where some of the newer writers too that are coming in, and they don't care or they don't know what they're doing, you know. I'm giving away a good idea. They don't care.
Or it's like at least they're doing it with like the knowledge that, you know, it's understood now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm creating this character. I'm not gonna. They have the option, and they're making a choice, you know?
Right. Yeah. And maybe, I mean, even though I'm sure that, you know, I mean, it's going to be a DC-owned character, maybe they're getting enough of a deal where if it appears in movies, TV shows, whatever, they get a cut, that it's worth it to them to go ahead and do it, you know? Who knows?
Well, DC has done some weird stuff with, like, Bloodhound and Monolith and a couple of other characters that came out in the 2000s that time has expired, and then those creators got the characters back.
Yeah.
Because Bloodhound went to Dark Horse with the creator, and Monolith went back to Palmiotti in Gray. So, you know, when they signed those contracts, they had like a time thing, I think, where if we don't use your character in a title for X amount of time, then you get the rights back.
Yeah, but I mean that's risky because from what I understand, that's what Frank or I mean Alan Moore did for Watchmen too.
But
And
they, yeah,
that
but
didn't work
Watchmen
out
is a different,
for them.
Watchmen is a different beast. Like
Oh, absolutely.
it's an exception to the rule. It's like Walking Dead. It doesn't play by the rules. Like it's just an anomaly.
No, but
I mean,
when he
you
made
can
that
actually.
deal, he's probably like, "Oh yeah, nope. No, this is great. I mean, they don't re-release stuff. You know, stuff doesn't stay in print. They don't do like trades that stay in print." And then down the road, that's what happened.
But it's
But at the
still
time, it
like,
was unheard of.
but it's still a top seller,
That's
Watchmen.
what I
Like
mean. But there's no way he could have predicted that at the time that he made that deal.
I like going to Target and just looking at their young adult or what they have, and what they have in the they have Watchmen with the novels. Like Watchmen is put out at the stores,
Yeah, that's crazy.
and it's still selling. Like it's still a bestseller.
Oh, yeah.
And Alan Moore is a different kind of like he probably wouldn't be making money on it if he had it. Like he's a different. I don't think he thinks money first. Like he has visions in his head, and he's so loyal to what he did that even though everything he did was like a knockoff of something else. I mean, everything he's known for, or he took a character in a different direction. But everything had, you know, like Supreme is Superman. Swamp Thing he took over and reinvented it a little bit. The Watchmen is the Charlton characters. I mean, so he just is able to run with things. The
Oh
only
yeah, for
stuff
sure.
that I think, even like his stuff at Avatar, it's all Cthulhu based. So you could say it comes from that, you know, like.
Yep.
From the novels. So, I don't know. And then, like, his League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, it's all based on characters created in the books. So, yeah, I wish he was just a little bit different because he could have his daughter and family living a lot better than they do. So, because I think Dave Gibbons is taking advantage of that. And you see it when you watch the Watchmen TV show because it says created. It won't say Alan Moore. It
No.
says created by Dave Gibbons.
Yep, and he was our consultant right on the show.
Yeah, he was, so.
Well, whatever Alan wants to
Yeah, he's a
do.
master. I mean, you can't argue with what it's like a dying he never went the money route, I guess. He went for what was in his heart and what he believed. And he never budged, which is very different than most of humanity.
Oh,
So
yeah.
you gotta give him credit there. But most people would say, wow, you could have been living like this. Because if anybody, like when you compare DC and Marvel, and creators will even tell you this, DC is way more generous to their creators.
That's what I understand.
Like
Well,
Starlin
especially when it
didn't get
comes to
shit
like
when it
in
came to
film, right?
Thanos. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Which is, you know, I mean, hey, I don't understand it, but
Well, Disney's struggling. I mean,
yeah, that's true. They need the money more than the creators do.
yeah.
yesterday was supposed to be 50, but we like got like this ice fog and the deck was like iced over, so Harley was slipping all over. So this morning I went and got we have that PetSmart melter and I put it on the deck and you know what she does? She goes around it.
Should have wanted nothing to do with that.
So it just goes on the ice anyway. It's like, what the hell? I went out there for you and almost broke my neck. And then you walk around it.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, do you want to go next, Rob, or do you want me to?
Sure, no. Yeah, I can. All right, the first one I did today was Daredevil number 290.
Sounds like you're in that Miller thing.
This is a little after. This is after though. But I've been I don't know.
You
Something about
jumped a hundred.
Daredevil
You
lately.
jumped
I've been
about a
itching.
hundred issues from the last time.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. But I don't know. There's something lately about Daredevil that I've been just interested in.
That's because he's the best.
Is that the reason?
Yeah, he's the best Marvel character. I hate to tell you that, but he is.
Well, see, I must be onto something. So this
The
is a
thing
this
that I love about Daredevil, and maybe it's just me, but there's so many great incarnations, and it doesn't let up. Like, I don't know, each one has its appeal.
No,
From Frank
I
Miller
agree.
on, at least. From Frank
Yeah.
Miller on, each one has its appeal. I even like the old stuff, but from that point,
I like the old stuff too, but the old
even like
stuff
the
was more like regular
Anacenti, and then
superhero.
you have, I mean, you have D.G. Chinchester, and then you got Bendis, and you got Ed Brubaker and Kevin Smith. All that stuff I think was fantastic.
Yeah.
Even today, even the Mark Waid stuff, even though it was the Mark Waid stuff was like a take it up a lighter tone than it usually is.
Yeah, and I'm loving the new stuff that Chip Zdarsky is doing. It
Yeah, and the
that's been
Charles
really
Soule
good.
I like too, so.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting. But like each creator like from not every single time necessarily, but a lot of them from Frank Miller on have had their own very unique or specific take
And
to
length and sort of
the Dark
lengthy runs for the most part, like
Mm.
more at least more than a year.
Yeah.
So they
Yeah,
get to
for
put
sure.
their stamp on him for sure.
Exactly. Well, this was a good one too. Let's see. I got to get to the credit page. So Ann Nesenti is responsible for this issue, and Kieran Dwyer was the artist.
I love her, by the way. I think she's
And
amazing. Yeah.
yeah, this
I
was a
love too that she
really
was in
good issue.
that Claremont documentary. Like
Yeah.
I dig her. Like, I'm a fan. I would like to meet her at a convention when this coronavirus is gone. Go ahead.
At the Fisk offices, and he's got all of his lawyers and stuff in the boardroom, and he's talking, and he wants to get out of.
Are you guys losing connection or is it just me?
I think Rob's just cutting in and out.
But did you hear when I was talking?
About what?
About Anacenti?
Yep.
So it's just Rob. I can't
I
hear
think it's
Rob.
just Rob cutting in
Oh,
and
I
out,
think
yeah.
he's gone. I don't
Yeah,
see him
I
anymore.
heard him come in. It was silent, and then I heard him come in like in the middle of talking about Wilson Fisk and lawyers, and then he cut out again.
Yeah, let me s I don't even see him on Skype. I can't add him to the call. What the hell's happening?
Maybe one of his kids unplugged the computer.
Or his internet. But usually I can see him. It's like he doesn't exist. I can't add, like, I could add people to the call. Are you there?
Me?
Yeah.
I think so.
Wow. I don't see your icon anymore either. Oh, it's because you're in the center. It says Rob's there, but it's like he's not there. I don't know if you see the same thing. Oh, there he
Yeah.
is. I just hope the recording's still going.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what happened there? I could hear every word that you guys were saying.
Well, we lost you when
Don't know.
you cut out for like 2 seconds, and then you came. You were talking about Wilson Fisk, and then you
All
went
right.
for about a minute, and then it like you were gone, gone. And then I was like, everybody's gone but me. But then Chris
No.
answered me.
Yeah, and I could hear everything you guys were saying, which was strange. Well, anyhow, did you hear that I said this was Ann Nesenti and Kieran Dwyer?
Yeah. Did you
Yeah, and
heard
then Mike
that
talked
part?
about Ann Nesenti a little bit, and then you disappeared mostly.
Okay, so Fisk is in his boardroom with his lawyers, and he wants to get out of drugs. He wants to get out of low-level crime. He wants to, he's interested in white-collar crime, is exactly what he says. So he wants legitimacy, and so he starts asking his lawyers what they need, and he ends up wanting to buy some media. He wants to buy a newspaper. He wants to buy a television station. He says, "Let's get on this." So they say, "Okay." So that's how it starts. But then we quickly get into apparently previously in this story arc, Bullseye had taken somehow taken over the Daredevil identity and has been going nuts, rampaging through the city, killing muggers, killing thieves and stuff, but also killing their victims. And I mean, he's just doing whatever he feels like doing. So Daredevil is tracks down where Bullseye had been, and he's like, ah. So he finds Bullseye's costume, and he's like, this is, okay, this is going to be a fair trade. And he puts on the Bullseye costume. So what we see is on the streets of New York, some like a gang of kids start beating up an elderly couple for their person and wallet and stuff, and Daredevil, actually Bullseye, comes and starts watching, and he's not doing anything. He's just standing there watching, and so the whole crowd of people start beating up the gang and kick them away, and they're like, "Why didn't you help? Why didn't you help?" And he's just standing there, and they start tossing garbage at him, and they throw an apple, a half-eaten apple, at him, and he grabs it and throws it at the old man's head and knocks out the old man and just swings away. So he's about to stop a mugging where he kills the mugger with a pen, and the old woman who's getting mugged is absolutely shocked. She's like, oh my God, you didn't have to kill him. And he's like, oh, I'm just doing my duty, and I've got another pen. And he's about to throw it at her when Daredevil as Bullseye knocks into him, and they start fighting. So what Daredevil's plan is at this point is he's acting. He's like talking and acting like he's actually Bullseye, because Bullseye's pretty messed up in the head, and so he's actually trying to confuse Bullseye into thinking that Bullseye is actually Daredevil for real. So at one point, Matt Murdock gets knocked off the side of a building. He's holding on. He's like, "Daredevil, please, you can't let me die." And he's like, actually, like, almost fooling him and fooling Bullseye into thinking that he's really Daredevil. And he starts helping him up, and when he's realized, he's like, "Oh," he's like, "Wait a minute, I'm not really Daredevil." And they start fighting some more, but he's really, really confusing the crap out of the actual Bullseye. So pretty soon he's got Bullseye on the ropes. Matt Murdock does, and he starts really, really beating on him. But finally, Bullseye as Daredevil manages to escape right at the last minute, because he kind of realizes what Matt Murdock's doing to him, and he gets away. This lasts for most of the issue. The only interlude is just a little interlude with Foggy, and he's kind of like doing a soliloquy where he kind of feels like he needs Matt Murdock back, that he's kind of lost his way as a lawyer, and he needs Matt back as like a kind of like a guiding light. So cuts back to Fisk, and one of his lawyers comes in and says that, we weren't able to get much, but we did get a small newspaper and a bottom rung television station. And Fisk is pleased nonetheless, and he says that that's all he needs is he's going to make his own Fisk News Network. And he's like, we're not just going to look for news, we're going to create it, and we're going to go to the top. So where exactly this is going to go, I can't quite say. But then it turns out that Matt does end up catching up with Bullseye, and he really starts laying into him. And by the end, he knocks out Bullseye, and he basically says, like, you know what, we're both messed up. You don't know who you are, I don't know who I am. We turned out to be the same man, and he rips off both masks, and he just kind of kneels down. And that's the end of the issue. It was really a great issue. I really enjoyed reading this, but I would like to go back and reread again at some point with some more context, because again, I just like read this out of nowhere, so I don't know exactly what was going on prior to this, except for obviously the huge beats. But I think I'd appreciate it quite a bit more. So I'd like to get back, go back and read a lot of this leading up to this point, and then keep reading beyond that. But that's actually the plan with like me getting a lot of these Daredevils, trying to fill in like a lot of holes that I had, because I'd like to read like a big solid run. Mike, we had talked about before the whole Frank Miller run and how I've only read issues here or there and never like the entire beginning to end. I can honestly say it probably would be just as interesting to read the whole Ann Nesenti run as well, because it's the same way.
Yeah,
I picked and choose the issues throughout, you know.
you're reading in a weird way. Like
Yeah, I'm just grabbing an issue
you
here,
have you
grabbing
have
an
a
issue.
you missed an issue, you got that issue, and then you read and you kind of miss all the context that's around it. But back then they do a decent job. I
No,
mean,
I mean, yeah, you totally get
it's
what's going on. It's
yeah,
just that.
it's not hard to like figure out. It's just like hey, do I want to keep reading? That's what's nice about I think it's nice to have the Marvel Unlimited app, because when I am in a situation like that and I read an issue and I'm like, man, I really like that issue, I think I'm going to continue with that arc, I can
Yeah.
do it, I can do it.
Absolutely.
So I love the DC and Marvel Unlimited apps for that, especially late night reading and doing that.
Yeah, I definitely have to go
Like I
back
don't
and
know,
find
like I, it blows my mind, and I maybe this is just a weird thing, but it blows my mind how Nick likes to buy of Nerdy Legion these collections for cheap and have them all stocked up when he can just have Marvel Unlimited and have all of it. Like the whole library is there. That it just blows my mind, 'cause you're digital anyway, you still have the same zoom in browsers. I just can't grasp hold why you'd want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a financial thing or what. I'm sure that's part of
No,
it. You just
but
want to
I
pay for a
bet
monthly
you,
service.
I bet you, like I don't know, I know his circumstances are different now, but when they were different, went before, I think that he would save money on the $6.99 a month than buying five collected editions at $5.99
Yeah, it's
when they're
very
all
possible.
there.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
I would love to talk about him the math, but I know what, as collectors and readers, we all have our weird
Yeah.
things. Like, not I'm one to talk. Nothing I do makes sense when it comes to comics. There's no. I keep trying to think. I shouldn't say this while Barb's in the room, but I keep trying to teach my head like, well, less could be more, but I can't. It's like pulling teeth.
I'm sure
I
that I'm sure that
love
Barb would be willing to help you.
yeah, I know. I love to be able to go to the basement and just have everything. It's like being able to go to your archive and say, I just want to read this. And
Absolutely.
not digitally. I mean, in a perfect world, that would be what I mean, if everything made sense, that's the way I should be. But I don't get the same. It's a different stimulus. It kind of agitates my eyes. I don't know if it does you guys, but it does me. Unless it's lit. Like if it's lit, it's not so bad. But when I read
Lit mean
digital at
like
dark,
exciting, like fun. Like, man, this party's lit.
yeah, lit.
Yeah,
But lit, I thought lit meant you were drunk.
it used to mean. Yeah. I think that it's been appropriated to mean just like, this party's lit.
Drunk.
I don't know. We gotta, I don't know.
All right, so mine is gonna be quick. I couldn't make up my mind what to cover, so I had bought like two long boxes worth of books I haven't inventoried yet from Cowabunga, and a lot of them were funny books, but a lot of them were just these weird things that nobody cares about. So I picked Cobalt Blue, and it comes from Power Comics, and I have a few other Power Comics. The Power Comics, the title itself, they're really elongated. They're really tall, but they're comic book size. This Cobalt Blue is regular size. It came out in 78, and it seems real expensive for the time. It's 50 cents. That seems expensive for 77, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It also doesn't have like a glossy cover. It's almost like it was if you made a comic and didn't put a cover on it. That's kind of what it looks like. It has a cover, like a cover art, but the material stock is not like cover stock. It's basically the same print that's inside the comic. It was supposed to be published bi-monthly, but this is the only issue that exists. But God bless Kirk, because Kirk is probably the only guy on the planet that I know of that would say, Cobalt Blue, I he is. God bless him, man, because he knows the obscure. And he says, go check out Innovation. And sure enough, if you jump a decade or so, in 1989, Cobalt Blue came out in Innovation for two issues and one graphic novel. So it'll be interesting to track that down. And he said he's a fan of Mike Gustovich, which is the artist and writer of, well, he doesn't draw the interiors, but he draws the covers, and he is good. Oh, he is the artist in the interior. Kyle Hyde is the writer slash creator, but I guess Gustavich took over in 1989, and I think he might have appeared in something that Rob talked about recently. What was that indie comic? Justice Machine. Didn't you
Oh,
talk
yeah.
about Justice Machine?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so he might have been in there somewhere, either as a backup or as a character. I'm not sure. It says he. What does our database say? It says something about Justice Machine. Later. I can't scroll down enough. It's a bug in the software.
I've been having a lot of issues with it lately.
Later reprinted in Justice Machine. So it was reprinted in Justice Machine. So these issues were maybe a backup in Justice Machine.
Could be.
But
It doesn't.
it's all
It's
fast.
not familiar to me.
It's
So
all
it's not in
fascinating.
the issues I have.
Yeah, I just love it. I love that Kirk is able to say, "Ooh, Cobalt
That man knows like every single obscure thing.
Yeah. He's like drawn to the obscure. He might not know like what happened in DC and Marvel, but you mentioned this crazy character from this book that never sold to anybody, and he'll like know it.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's what his specialty is. But this guy's a super soldier in the future, and he was in the service of the Empire, but he has to escape, and he escapes via time travel to Washington, D.C. And it's almost like these guys, the government at least, knows something about him because they want to arrest him, and he's on the run. So he's on the run from the government, and there's this shady guy in the government that's watching him and dispatching people to go kill him. And he appears to be an alien, and they send Overkill to go. I think Overkill's a Todd McFarlane character too, but
Yeah,
they
overt kill.
Overt Kill. Well, this guy's Overkill. They send him to go stop Cobalt Blue, and then it just ends. It says to be continued next issue, and there is no next issue
There's
until
no acting next issue.
11 years later. So, but
Was
it's
it worth the wait?
fascinating. They have an article in here, and it says that he was in college with Kevin, this Mike Gustavich, and they were doing a strip in their college newspaper, and he was doing about Cobalt Blue, and the paper canceled it really early. They said, "We don't want none of that. You're boring people to tears." So then he like shopped it around to many publishers, and nobody wanted it. And Power Comics finally got a hold of it and says, "Yeah, we'll do this for you." And that's how it came to Power Comics and came to be. And not only did Power Comics want him to put his comic in their print, but they hired him kind of as a creative editor. So he was like the editor, art editor for Power Comics Studio, which is more fascinating information to me than the actual story itself. But there is a backup story of the Mask, and I guess you consider the Mask he looks like the spirit. He just looks like a Hispanic dude that has a mask. And I don't think he has any powers. I'm not sure. It doesn't explain it. But it opens up with two detectives walking down, talking about stuff, and this woman comes and tries to throw battery acid in their face. Although it's not really battery acid. She's trying to make a point. It was like baking soda. And she's mad at these detectives because they framed her brother for murder. And but his fingerprints were these cops were not crooked cops. They just found his fingerprints all over the place. So she gets a hold of the mask and says, I need your help. And he says, okay, I'll figure out what's going on. Well, he uncovers a conspiracy where this guy is using this technology to generate fingerprints. And he didn't commit the murder, somebody else did. And the mask works his way to take him down. The art style is really interesting. I don't even know who's credited on this thing. They're invented and illustrated by. I can't read it, but our database gives some credit. But it's a strange art style because it looks really like amateur, especially when you look at the action scenes. They look really not good.
Really not good.
But it's weird because when they do a close up on the character, like a facial close up, looking at it, even from an angle, it looks really good. So it's strange because it's almost like this guy who was drawing could really draw faces and stuff,
Yeah.
but he was having trouble with like anatomy and doing like a fight scene. So I don't know. It's pretty interesting. I love this kind of stuff. I love having comics that nobody cares about except for me,
Nice.
and Kirk, because I know there's somebody else on the planet that could appreciate this odd stuff. But that's Cobalt Blue from 1978.
Very nice.
Power Comics.
Whole vault
Chris.
blue.
So the other thing I read was also DC from the same time period. Which is Legion of Superheroes.
Chris, I love the Legion of Superheroes.
Do you, oh, have you heard of them?
I've heard of them, yeah.
Well, that's cool. Let's see if I can find the right series here. So this is 1984.
They've had a few series.
Yeah, just a few.
They have, and I just one little comment to Rob. I don't care for the new one.
No?
One of the things that drives me crazy is, you know how the Legion of Superheroes, a lot of the comics, they'll put those little boxes and say, okay, this is Wildfire, this is so-and-so, because there's just so many characters.
Yeah.
Well, in the new series, they have these damn floating holograms, like,
yeah.
And it follows the character everywhere.
The thing is, they
artistically rotate it, so it obfuscates who it is anyway. Like, if the guy's standing sideways, well, the thing floating over him is sideways, and you can't read it anyway. It just muddles the art. It looks like crap. I can't stand it.
I will say it is not my preferred series of Legion of Superheroes.
The story is so big, and there's so many characters. Like one thing that makes Legion of Superheroes, at least that I like, is sometimes they'll divide them into fours or threes, and they go off and do something, and it's like, it means something. You get to know about their personalities a little bit. Right now, it's just like you're throwing this huge team against the wall and saying, here's everything. Mm-hmm. And it's not really a lot of personal stuff except for when it comes to Superboy and Robin. And I was like...
And we already know all about Superboy and Robin.
Yeah, and I already know about them. Then Millennium was amazing because it took a character, Rose and Thorn, and like made something big. Like it took a lot of history and said bang, and then we haven't seen her.
Yep.
I don't know.
If my two complaints, I mean, basically, I'm echoing what yours. One, it's just nonstop. Like there's been no break where you can actually get any type of character, like.
Just
not
a
character development, but
well,
just to
even
know
a character,
who these characters are.
Exactly, a character moment. Throw me a bone and have these two talking about something, you know? Like,
right. We've had no character moments, and they've really, really focused so much on 21st century stuff, whether it's Superboy and Robin or Aquaman's try, you know, the whole thing with Aquaman's try. Like, I'd like to see more, you know, 31st century type stuff and some focus on those characters because we don't know who they are at this point.
And
especially since they changed them up so much, it makes it even harder.
I want to give it back to Chris, but I got one other thing. The costume redesigns are my least favorite of any incarnation we've had so far.
100%.
There is not one character that I could say is an improvement over any incarnation in the redesign of the costume.
They're very bad redesigns.
They're not even catchy, though. Like, they're not the color schemes or the, I don't know. It's weird. And I don't usually like to complain about stuff, but it's my biggest DC disappointment right now. And Chris is going to talk about the good stuff, so let's let him.
Yeah. Chris, sorry.
That's okay. No, that's interesting. I hadn't heard anything about the new series. I'm sorry to hear that. It's disappointing. I did find a pet page of art from, I don't know what issue it's from, but to see what Mike's talking about with the holograms, it's kind of weird. I can see what they were thinking, like trying to come up with an idea of how to like help people.
It's very
easily identify
it's
them.
It's very
but
like cool. It sounds cool, but then you're like, how much are they going to carry this into the book? And it's
Yeah,
in there, and
it's
it's very it, and every panel, like every other panel, it's gone, and then it's there, and then it's gone, and it's like annoying. I want him to like, I want him to go away from it. I want him to go back to the old way, 'cause you could read him. It's not at a 45-degree angle and backwards. Like if they're standing backwards, then it's like you have to get a mirror to read it. I'm like, this is ridiculous.
It's an interesting idea, but it doesn't seem to work that great. Well, this is issue 37 of the 1984 series by Paul Levitz, Greg LaRocque, and Mike DiCarlo. It has some of the Legionnaires on the cover. It's Cosmic Boy, Brainiac, Mon-El, Ultra Boy, and Night Girl, and they're in front of a Welcome to Smallville sign that Superboy is busting through. This was where Levitz attempted to sort of deal with the paradox that was created by having Superboy be such a important part of the Legion's history and have the character be wiped out, or Superman being Superboy at all be wiped out of Superman's history by Crisis. So it's called A Twist in Time, and it starts out in 2987. At the remains of the Metropolis University's Time Institute, and some of the Legionnaires are trying to reconstruct the time beacon that was. It's been a long time since I read the previous issue, but I think it was destroyed or in the previous issue. Because I think it was the previous issue where this storyline started out. So a bunch of them do a bunch of different little things to contribute. And then they're just discussing what's they're trying to get done, because they're expecting more problems with the time trapper. It was it was him that was responsible for this attack and this damage, and they're expecting him to wage an all-out war on their century. But it's a guesswork; they don't know for sure. But this is also kind of this is connecting back to the Cosmic Boy miniseries, which was the tie-in to Legends, where Cosmic Boy found that things in the past, in their history, in what was our present day at the time, had changed. So Brainiac's ready. He wants to take he wants to take pretty much the whole Legion into the future with him. And Timberwolf and Block bring in a time bubble, which is the tech that the Legion used to travel through time, and it's a much bigger one than they've used in the past. So, like I said, Brainiac's ready to contact everyone that's not there. He goes to use his flight ring to do that, and all of a sudden, it gets encased in ice. And Polar Boy is has just recently become the leader of the team. Former member of the Legion of Substitute Heroes, and he's been in contact with EarthGov, they have their concerns about the entire Legion taking off into the future, so. They need to leave some of the members behind. They Brainiac can't take everybody with them. Meanwhile, we get like a one-page little interlude where Universo is being put into a prison called the Labyrinth. The storyline that preceded this one was one that dealt with Universo. So this is kind of following up on that. But ultimately, a small group of Legionnaires go into the time bubble with Brainiac, and there's some discussion kind of the ones that are going. It's kind of a strange combination in some of their opinions, and you know, they're still adjusting to Polar Boy being the leader, but they start flying through time, and with the time bubble, Mon-El is actually outside the time bubble pushing it, but they start having some issues as they get close to the end of time, which is where they're headed to confront the time trapper. And then we see the time trapper at the end of time, and he's kind of predicted exactly what they're planning on doing, and he is going to send them to a time period that they highly value. So instead of the end of time, they end up in Smallville in the past. It's kind of a funny moment where they land and Brainiac's got his nose in his computers and he's trying to calculate exactly where they've landed. And Nightgirl says, "We're in Superboy's time, right?" And he's surprised that she's able to calculate. He was able to calculate that, and she just points outside the time bubble, and they're sitting right in front of a billboard that says, "Welcome to Smallville, home of Superboy." So, some of the like Brainiac, Block, and a couple others stay back with the time bubble, partially because they want to, you know, don't want to send everybody into town, but they also only want to send those that can pass as a normal-looking human. So Nightgirl, Cosmic Boy, Mon-El, and Ultra Boy head into Smallville. They still kind of, you know, the Legion still sort of is outside the crisis or whatever you want to call it. So Mon-El talks about how he had stayed with the Kents. And some of the other ones, they've been to, you know, they've been to Smallville before, and they run into Pete Ross, who recognized Ultra Boy and the Legionnaires, and he said, "Yeah, you know, how's things going here?" And Pete Ross says, "Everything's been okay. Ever since Superboy saved us from the weird red skies and that energy wall." And, you know, people reading DC at the time are, you know, red skies, that's obviously connected to the crisis. And, but it really, it's just Pete's assuming that Superboy saved them because they, you know, the red skies were there for a few days and then they weren't. And he just, you know, Superboy, if anything's wrong in Smallville, it's Superboy saves the day. So so eventually they end up at the Kent General Store, and the Kents are excited to see Mon-El, and they introduce her to Nightgirl because she's never met them. And Superboy's not there, so they sit down and Ma Kent serves them dinner, and then Clark does finally show up, you know, and they greet each other and stuff. And then after dinner, Clark says, "Well, Mom's cleaning up. Why don't we talk about why you're here in the basement, and Clark takes some kind of looks like a spotlight or some kind of thing, and he shines it on the four Legionnaires and puts them in time stasis. And then even more surprisingly, it seems like the Kents know what's going on. He said, Pa Kent says, "Did you paralyze them, Clark?" They know that there's four more Legionnaires in a time bubble near the town line, and so Clark's about to head off as Superboy when Lana Lang shows up at the door to see if Clark can help her with their algebra. After we get like a brief interlude where Polar Boy is talking to Element Lad just about the pressures of being the leader and stuff, and then we're in the woods at the time bubble, and Pete Ross comes up on his bike and tells the four Legionnaires that are waiting that they need to take off and get out of there. That he was out that he heard screaming inside of the Kent house and nobody came out, and that if something was strong enough to attack Superboy, Mon-El, and Ultra Boy, that they need to go get the rest of the Legion. So they take off in the time bubble, but right before they are able to escape into time, Superboy shows up and with that same device and tries to stop them, but it's just a second too late as they're able to take off into time, but they do see him try to do this. He was delayed by making excuses to Lana. So they take off wondering if they really were in the Smallville that they know, because it seems like maybe Superboy was evil, and they're wondering if there's, if Time Trapper has messed with all eras of history. But Superboy at the end, he's thinking that he doesn't have a choice. He's got to save the Kents, even if it means he'll track the Legionnaires through time. So he heads off into the future, and the last page is just the Time Trapper at the end of time, kind of gloating that his plan is going according to schedule. So yeah, I thought it was a neat ending, just set up some fun mystery, and it's cool how it sort of connects back to the pre-crisis. I think like there was some problems as to how this all resolved, and I don't know if they really planned ahead enough as to the ramifications of removing Superboy from Superman's history. But I think it's neat that Levitz tried to at least make a story out of it, and even if it ends up not totally solving the issue of like the continuity issues.
Yeah, with Crisis and stuff, they definitely had their their issues. I mean, Legion has seemed to always suffer from rejiggering the continuity.
Yeah.
But I love the Legion.
Yeah, I mean, and this doesn't. Levitz just makes a point of if it's the first time that the character is seen in the issue, somebody says the character's name, in the first dialogue towards them, say like,
I'd rather have that.
well, Rob,
And now you know that's Rob.
now that you've asked, and then after that, that's Rob, and
But do they reference them by first name, or do they reference, "Hey, Saturn girl"?
Yeah, no, they use the code names pretty much, and then
Yeah, that.
maybe after that they'll use their actual name or something. But it seems like he makes a point to use the code name first.
And see, that's kind of weird too, though, because I even think they poked fun of it in a current Justice League book, about like talking. You wouldn't normal like when you're around somebody, you wouldn't like they were in the Hall of Justice or something like that, and they'd say, "Hey, Superman," but they all knew he was Kal-El, or like, "Hey, Bruce," and Batman, like. But then again, it would be odd too. Like, I think it would be tough to have an alias that's not known, and then you're in a fight. You're in a fight scene, and you're like, "Bruce, watch out!" Like, just not say Batman. Like, imagine how hard it would be to not do that if you knew their name.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so that could be a good reason to give to say, well, we're going to use code names so that we're in the habit of it, so we don't accidentally give away each other's identities in the middle of in a stressful situation.
Yeah.
That, as a like from a writer perspective, that gives you like an excuse. But yeah, it can be awkward. You have to kind of be careful about it, so that doesn't sound
You
too.
know what I'm a fan of, and maybe this is going too old school, but I used to love opening up an old Justice League or Legion of Superheroes and seeing the floating heads on the first page, and they
Yeah.
would have everybody that's in the comic
Oh
and
yeah,
who
I
they
used to love
were.
that.
I love that way. That's my favorite way. And then you would like when you were a kid and you kind of like, "Who's this new character?" You could always go back and, "Oh, that's Karate Kid."
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I think when there's a large cast like with the Legion, I still think that that could be an easy, effective way to do it.
Yeah, I agree.
What issue was this again? I didn't write the number. Hello?
Christopher?
Oh, 37.
All right, Rob.
Okay, so my next one, kind of as far as what I was talking about with the Daredevil one, I would say that this one suffers a little bit more in terms of not knowing what had happened the previous issue. I read Hex number 5 because, but I don't have 3 or 4. So, this is by Michael Fleischer and Chris, how do you pronounce the artist's name? It's Mark something.
Teixeira.
There you go. Thank you. I
I
don't
mean, I know
remember
that's like,
that.
I think that can be pronounced a few different ways, and I don't know if that's the way that he uses, but that's at least one way.
Okay. Well,
I always
I'm going
say
to go with that.
Texiera, but I
That's what I
don't.
would say, but I don't know. But so this
Just
is
say
issue number 5.
Tex.
Yeah, this is for we've got Michael Fleischer and Mark Tex. It refer throughout this issue, it refers to issue number 4 probably 5 times. I didn't read issue number 4. So I was a little bit I wasn't lost by any means, but it just kept referring to things. So I didn't know what had happened in the past. It starts out right away with some action. It's got now the premise, Jonah Hex had been flung into the future at some point. I guess in Hex number 1, and he's since made friends with this woman, this futuristic woman. So they're together here, and right away they're being attacked by like a flying craft that's shooting lasers at them, telling them to freeze. So they immediately do, and these guys come out, and you can tell they're kind of Hex and this woman are being shaken down. Well, Hex isn't gonna, Jonah's not gonna stand for that. So he pulls out a knife and throws it at the guy, hits him square in the chest, and bounces off because he's wearing like a type of armor underneath his jacket. But while he's revealing the armor, laughing at Hex for throwing the knife at him, the woman swings her leg right between the other guy's legs and knocks him down. That distracts the guy that Jonah's in front of, and he punches the guy out. They grab their rifles and they steal the flying craft. It's not necessarily a spacecraft, but it flies throughout the air, and they take off. So in the meantime, there's this other guy that apparently has been going back and forth from the past to the future, and he's I don't know exactly what he's trying to do, but apparently a lot of this was recounted in issue 4, but he's trying to get things from the future and then going back to the past. Part of the problem is that each time he does it, it's causing an instability in his own body, and he's it suffers from attacks, and then if he doesn't get back to his past, he will die. So he's in this lab, and he's trying to get these get some sort of a specialized microbe in kind of like a flask. And he goes to the particular location it's supposed to be, and he pulls out a gun and he asks for the flask, and they start handing it to him, where he collapses and has an attack, and his heart, it's almost like he's going to have a heart attack. So in order to stop that from happening, he's got to get back to where he's from. So he has to forget about the microbe, and he hits a button on his wrist, like kind of like a little wristband, and he makes it back. And he shows up, and his assistants have to immediately like get him into a rejuvenation chamber in order to keep him from dying. So that's kind of like an interlude. Not quite sure exactly where that's going at this point, where it goes back to Jonah and this woman. And I apologize, but I cannot find her name so far. So not sure exactly who what she's called.
Turn to the front page and look at the floating heads.
There's no floating heads. I don't know what's going on here or who this woman is. But they fly to this area. They realize they need to raise some money. And I guess money at this point is called Soames, Soames. And they decided that they're going to need to kind of do a futuristic, almost like a stagecoach robbery in order to get enough money together so they can get equipment and weapons and personnel that they're going to need in order to get Hex back to his own time. And that's what the plan is at this point. So that's what they're going to do. They end up scoping out this facility that I guess is almost like it's like a treasury of sorts, and it's got, it's filled with money. So they get back into their flying vehicle. They crash it right into the side of the building, and the plan is that there's a truck full of money, and they jump in and start driving away with it. Now, in the meantime, this unknown person has hired out this this guy named named Chain, and to get a hold of Hex and try to stop Hex. So he's tracked him down because there's actually a beacon on the flying space vehicle that Hex and the woman had. And so he's managed to track that down. He gets there quick enough right after the they've stolen the truck, and they think they're kind of home free when suddenly a chainsaw goes right through the roof of the cabin of the truck, and they do some quick maneuvering to throw this chainsaw guy off, but he doesn't land. He's just flying in the air. He's got rocket boots. So Hex is pretty pissed off. He's like, doesn't anyone actually walk anymore? Like, the guy's flying all over the place. He flies right through the truck. In the meantime, Hex and the woman jump out of the truck because it's now fallen over on its side. Oh, here, I found her name. Her name's Stiletta. Stiletta gets knocked out. Hex grabs a long piece of scrap metal and threatens to ram it up the guy's butt, and but quick enough, Chain just cuts that piece of scrap metal in half, and Hex starts shooting him. But of course, that's not doing anything. The guy's totally armored up. So they run into a kind of like a junkyard, and it's got all sorts of demolished hovercrafts all over the place. So they start hiding. And Chain starts looking around, and he's trying to find them. But you know, it's like you would think of a junkyard. There's a lot of places to hide behind stacks of junk. So Hex starts pushing over a very precarious stack of hovercrafts, and manages to crash all of these hovercrafts on top of Chainsaw. But despite that, Chainsaw actually gets up underneath there and cuts his way through, and he's like, you know, that didn't stop me. So Stiletta's like, now, meantime, Hex is getting choked by Chainsaw, and Stiletta's like, Hex, press the button next to you. There's a power magnet. So much to Jonah's surprise, there's a magnet that's powerful enough to lift a whole man. And because the man's in a suit of armor, the power magnet goes over and just totally grabs the guy. They swing it over onto this conveyor belt, and this huge like power compactor just slams down right on top of Chainsaw. And so they're like, okay, well, we managed to do that. Let's walk out of here. And before they can, they realize all of a sudden they've been surrounded by all of these men and women with energy rifles, and it's this like the futuristic version of the mafia called the conglomerate. I'm sorry, I'm having trouble pronouncing this conglomerate that has been surrounded them, and then so that's the issue. So it's like out of the frying pan into the fire type situation here. They thought they were home free, and now they're totally surrounded. This is a good issue. I actually just went on while Chris was talking. Went on my comicshop.com and got all the missing issues of Hex that I didn't own. So I'll be reading that at some point.
Good deal.
Bought a yeah, I bought quite a few of these at David Adams, Chris, there when they were only a quarter an issue. But there was about five issues that they didn't have, so I just got those on my comic shop. And I got the 18 issues.
I can't imagine what I would come home with at that place.
Oh my God, they did.
Because
Like, they need
you
to
know how
provide you with
I like
boxes.
everything, and there's a lot of stuff that I probably would have just for a quarter, I can't go wrong.
That's the thing. And I mean, they'd have to give you whole boxes of, like, you know,
I
a
might
comic
have just take
book,
all the boxes and just say, how much for the whole thing?
Now, when we were just there the other night, they got a whole new shipment of all of those. So they went back up to 50 cents because they're brand new books. But I mean, that's where I got like the Sergeant Rocks and the you know, Our Army at War, and they had a lot of like I mean, ratty, but still, like Spider-Man comics, like 180s, 160s, 190s, these are older issues. And
Yeah.
yes, they're in good shape, but they were 50 cents.
Nice.
Yeah. I would have picked up some, but I had most of those, so I just concentrated on those war ones that I showed you. But I mean, 50 cents, they had a lot of good issues for 50 cents.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, my next issue is an issue of Tom and Jerry from Gold Key. It's issue number 229. And why I pick this is because yesterday morning when Barb was on an appointment, I was like, oh, I want something on in the background while I'm looking through these comics. And I put it on Boomerang and I started watching Tom and Jerry. And Tom and Jerry
Company
was
this Mike?
what?
Which volume of this is?
Gold Key, but I think it's under Dell. Like it, Dell was the original, and then Gold Key took over the
Gotcha.
numbering, so it might
Okay.
be under Dell in our database.
Yep.
One thing I guess I never realized is that Chuck Jones did Tom and Jerry, and Mel Blanc did some work on there as well. And I've always been a Looney Tunes guy, like, so it was more Tweety and Sylvester for me in terms of a cat. But Tom and Jerry I would catch on from time to time and watch them. And one of the things that I adore about Tom and Jerry and Pink Panther and some of those ones is the nature of silence and comic timing through visuals, because Tom and Jerry don't talk, at least in most incarnations. They were all done via visuals. And in the comic book, they talk. And they do the same thing in the Pink Panther. Unless it's like American Mythology started doing Pink Panther redos, and they do a fantastic job of capturing the timing and stuff with no words, because that's what makes the it kind of makes it special. And when you really look at the context of this comic, you could have gotten rid of the bubbles and still got the gist of the story. You would have known everything that happened in the story. But I started watching the cartoon and I was like, man, this is kind of entertaining. It was Jerry was starving and he saw a lunch box at a construction site. Meanwhile, Tom is at the top of his roof drinking a martini and eating cheese and enjoying his life. And it just becomes this weird scenario where they're both in this situation on a construction building with all the girders and all the rivets and stuff and chasing each other. It was very entertaining. So I was like, I'm going to read a comic book. So I pulled this out of the Cowabunga box along with a couple of things. And I read it, and it had a Tom and Jerry story. And I was like, who is this weird character? Like, who's this Scrappy-Doo of mice? Why is he in my comic? And turns out his name, I can't remember what his name is. It's so forgetful. Tuffy. So Tuffy's like a smaller mouse with a diaper. So he's like a younger mouse. But they want to go to the circus, and they don't know how to raise money to get to the circus, so they Tom is getting chased by Butch, and they kind of like hide him, and they say, can you help us? Can you give us some money to go to the circus? And he's like, I'm a cat. Well, I don't got no money. And he tries to go back to bed, and they stole his pillows because they're doing like high wa the clothes hanger thing, you know, where you hang your clothes. They're doing
Yeah.
like high wire acts to try to earn money from civilians, I guess, so they could go to the circus. So this whole time they're trying to earn money, and Tom is getting the brunt of all the pain because he's the one that gets caught in the bad stuff. So in this case, Tom was the innocent cat that just wanted to sleep and is getting tortured by these two. And then there was something that I don't know if it existed in animation. Any listener that can tell me if it did. It's called Professor Putter, and he sounds fascinating to me. He's like an inventor, and he has this record, and the record, I don't know if this ever happened to anybody with vinyl. It never happened to me, but maybe I didn't play things well enough. But he said his vinyl wore out over time, and it would start meddling with the other side, like it would start warping. I don't know if that's ever happened to you guys with vinyl. I don't even know if you guys were in the vinyl age,
Yeah,
but
oh, I had a lot of records, but I don't remember that.
yeah, I don't remember it ever warping like that. But it was warping, and he couldn't hear his music anymore. So he's like, "This record's out of print. I don't know how to get it." So he had invented this robot, and the robot knew how to hum, and he was always humming that song. So he's like, "Okay, I can invent this contraption to take your humming and then put in the music with it and remake a record." But while he was gone, the robot turned over to the flip side of the record, which is the side he doesn't like, which is a lot of noise. It's like one side is like classical music, and the other side's like if you put on heavy death metal. That's what they make it sound like. And so the robot listens to the heavy death metal, and sort of puts him into the hospital because he can't take it anymore. And he just says, "Screw this." So he's hum as the robot's humming now. He has his earplugs in, and he goes about his inventions. But that was pretty cool. So yeah, I want to Google this to see if this guy ever, Professor Putter, was in animation. And then it's got Droopy, if you ever remember Droopy. And the thing that's cool about the Droopy cartoons, at least in the comic book, is they are silent. So Droopy never talks. It's just like a one-page scenario of him doing something. And then you got a Jerry and Tuffy story about them trying to get sleep in the o this is like me with traps and stuff with mice. I guess they found out where the mice were. They put the trap there in their bed, and they found a way to like live on a roller skate to stop from getting killed. And then I never knew I don't know cats much. Maybe you guys could tell me, but do cats like to play with balls of string?
Oh yeah.
Well,
Very, very much so.
the interesting thing about this one is that Tom has become compulsive. He's become a Rob with
What?
string.
What do you
He's become a Rob with string, and he's collecting string, and he's like obsessive compulsive about the string. And Jerry and that other mouse are trying to get him off of his compulsion, and it's getting to the point where he's getting the string from like sugar bags and other things, and they're like tricking him to do stuff, and he's like tearing apart light fixtures from the ceiling and all kinds of things because he sees a string. And the owner kicks him out of the house. He's like, "You're destroying everything in the house. Until you get better, you're gonna be an outdoor cat. I can't take you anymore." But these mice, they contributed to his like expulsion, and it was pretty awful. And they put him in a straitjacket of string, and just tortured him with it, so he couldn't. Here he has his one vice, and he can't go get his string or anything because they made a straitjacket of string. That's like torture.
That's pretty mean.
And then the other is like a fishing story where Tuffy is trying to get Jerry to go fishing, and then another Droopy story. But it was pretty entertaining. I think they could have got away with making it silent, though. I guess you when you're making comics for kids, you struggle with the thing is you want kids to learn to read, so you want to have dialogue, right? You want to have a comic as dialogue and art, but then it kind of like takes away from the original source art form of the art itself, like what's the animation does with it. So that's Tom and Jerry, and you guys can cover what else you got.
Nice. Chris, do you have another one?
Nope, that's it for me.
Well, I've got another one.
Go
What
for
do you guys
it.
think of that?
I have one more too.
Well, I think now I'm going to cover this one by way of Chris Ivey because I believe I got this issue from him last year. It's about a year ago, right, Chris?
Maybe.
Did a bunch of comic books to me. I don't remember. But I'm going to cover today Marvel Team Up, which is Spider-Man and the Beast, number 90. Death Rides the Airwaves. And this is by Stephen Grant, Mike Vosburg, and Bob McLeod. So what we have here is we've got the Empire State University Technology Exhibition in 1980. And Peter Parker is dating a girl named Sissy at the time. And they're attending this convention. And they walk in, and who's there but the Beast, the blue-furred Beast. And he's being he's mobbed with female college students that just absolutely are in love with him. They want to run their fingers through his dreamy fur, and he's asking them to control themselves. Peter and Sissy walk in, and Peter thinks to himself he wishes that Spider-Man had such a fan club as the Beast. And he turns around and, well, Sissy has gone over to see the Beast too. And he's like, great. So he goes walking over to the exhibit. There's a microwave exhibit there that he wants to take a look. It's a molecular condenser, uses microwaves. So that's what he's there and he's interested in. And up on the balcony are two strange figures. We have Killer Shrike and the Modular Man. The Modular Man has a fedora on and a trench coat. But Killer Shrike is just standing there for all to see, just in his regular outfit, his spandex outfit, which is a little bit strange. Modular Man, they show a brief synopsis of his origin. Apparently, he had been looking into the secrets of molecular dissolution, and his experiment backfired. And what happened was the molecules within his own body began to drift apart, and he needed to create a metal skeleton that has been ionized to hold his body together. However, he is basically invisible and intangible. It's only his metal skeleton that you can actually see, which is why he's wearing a trench coat and a hat. So it doesn't look super strange. But Peter's over there looking at this microwave condenser, and that's exactly what the Modular Man is interested in. He tells Killer Shrike that that's what he needs in order to bond his molecules back together. They're about to go after that, regardless of the fact that there's a college student there, Peter, looking at it. Like, well, oh, well, he's in the way. We're going to have to go through him. But Peter ends up getting his spider sense starts tingling, and he's not sure why. So he leaves to go change into Spider-Man outfit, and Killer Shrike says, oh, he's leaving, so I guess that saves us a little bit of trouble. Let's go get the condenser. So Modular Man goes over there, and he sees that it's attached to an alarm, but he's like, well, we're going to have to take the direct approach. And he just breaks into it, and he grabs it. Just as Spider-Man comes, and Modular Man calls for Shrike. Shrike hits Spider-Man from behind very hard and knocks him down. This gets the Beast's attention, and Beast disrobes and jumps into the action. Modular Man removes his trench coat, and as I said, it's just like a skeleton. It's very strange looking.
Why does he disrobe? Why is he naked?
Well, Beast or Modular Man?
Beast. You said he disrobes.
He does, because he's wearing a regular, like, suit coat with his with a button-down shirt and pants. And so he now he's just wearing that
Now he's
blue
naked.
underwear. Well, he's got his blue underwear on that he always wears as the Beast.
Ah.
But it does give the women around him quite a thrill because one woman says, "Oh, Spider-Man's here too," and the other woman says, "Never mind that icky guy. The Beast is doing a striptease." So they're very interested in the Beast.
That's very sexual.
Yes.
I
So
love
now,
it.
huh?
I love it.
You love it? All
I
right.
love
Well.
that he's drawing women. Like
Yep.
you wouldn't think, 'cause he's pretty ugly, but Beauty and the Beast.
Well, you know
Made it
what?
out.
Everybody be down with it in the in 1980. Apparently, that was the thing.
Yeah.
Oh, Lattes wants to say hi. Do you guys hear the dog barking?
I did.
Okay. So, Spider-Man and Beast now are teaming up. They're taking on these two. Spider-Man calls Modular Man Mr. Bones. Modular Man doesn't like that. So Shrike starts attacking Spider-Man, and Modular Man starts attacking Beast. Modular Man grabs Beast and tosses him because he's very strong with this this robotic skeleton. And he throws him right at Killer Shrike, and Killer Shrike grabs him. And I don't know if you know anything about Killer Shrike, but his claws are electric. So as soon as he grabs Beast, he releases electricity through his body and kind of like knocks him out. In the meantime, Modular Man opens up a little lever on his robotic arm, and it's got poison gas. But Peter's quick enough to hold his breath, but unfortunately for him, Shrike bangs his electric claws together, and it shoots an energy blast that's four times as strong as a regular blast, and knocks Spider-Man out. So they take off with this microwave condenser. After both the Beast and Spider-Man are looked at by a doctor, and they've pronounced that the doctor pronounced that the Beast had a concussion, and Beast explains with his enhanced healing he's already fine. They say they gotta go after them. Spider-Man says, "I'll catch up with you in a minute. There's just something I have to take care of." And Peter changes back and escorts Sissy back home. He reaches in for a kiss, and Sissy turns away and closes the door. And Spider-Man and Peter's upset that he didn't get his goodbye kiss. So now we cut back to the villains, and they're talking, and basically they've made an agreement that if Shrike helped him get this condenser, that Modular Man would help get find out more about Killer Shrike. Apparently, Killer Shrike has some sort of an amnesia where he doesn't know where he got these powers from, and he doesn't know what had happened to him prior to getting these powers. And Modular Man has promised that he's going to help him with that. So Modular Man has done a little bit of adjustments onto the device, and he needs an influx of microwaves in a receiver to actually go through him to get his body back together, apparently. So it just so happens that there's a bunch of new stations coming on to cable television, and they're broadcasting from the Empire State Building. So they fly a helicopter. The two villains fly a helicopter up to the Empire State Building, and Killer Shrike has this receiver that's attached to the device and to Modular Man to take care of this. Now Beast is scoping this out. He sees the helicopter. Spider-Man rejoins him, and before the heroes can do anything about it, they've gone ahead and they're about to start broadcasting. So all these microwaves are going through this receiver, and the Modular Man starts bending over in pain, but he grows to enormous proportion. He's basically as big, and now they are at the Empire State Building. He's basically as big as now King Kong is. If you can picture King Kong in the original King Kong movie with the Empire State Building, he's about that big now. So he's about like three times the size of a regular person. And Killer Strike's very confused. And Killer Strike and Modular Man explains that this was his plan all along. He's got a lot more power now. He doesn't care about becoming a regular person anymore. And he has no intention of helping Killer Strike out. So he knocks Killer Strike off the Empire State Building. Spider-Man actually webs him and saves his life. And so now the two of them, the Beast and Spider-Man, are up against the Modular Man. And Killer Strike is doing his big villain soliloquy, saying that he's passed beyond physical limitations, and this is going to be a reign of terror, and basically he wants to, so forth, take over the world. And so what the heroes have come to the conclusion of is that a jolt of electricity scrambles TV transmissions. Maybe it would scramble the Modular Man as well. So Killer Strike's knocked out, but they've got him. So they grab Killer Strike, they each grab one of his wrists, and they clang his electric claws together and aim it right at the Modular Man. First, he says, "Idiots, his power has nothing to stop me. There's nothing you can do to harm me." And instead, he starts screaming, and he dissipates. So his energy, his molecules, if you will, have scattered all over the place, probably into half of the homes that the cable station has, is going to. His molecules, his energy has been zapped across all of these, through the television station, through everyone. So in the meantime, Killer Strike gets away, and Peter says, "Let him go." And B says, "What?" And he's like, "Well," he's like, "we stopped him. We stopped the Modular Man, and we've destroyed him. I know it was necessary and we didn't have a choice, but that doesn't mean I need to like it." And they both go their separate ways, and that was the end of that issue. So that was a good one. I definitely enjoyed reading a nice old-fashioned Marvel team-up. And I always liked the Beast. This was during the days that the Beast was in the Avengers. So it was pretty interesting to see how popular he was, even as a mutant. He had a throng of women around him. It was definitely a fun issue to read.
Yeah, the Beast was in the Defenders too at one
Yeah.
point.
Yeah, that's right.
So he's an X-Men, a Defender,
An
and
Avenger.
an Avenger.
Yeah, so that was a good one. What else do you have, Mike?
Have the Jetsons. Do
Wow,
do do
you
do do
you had a
do do
little
do.
cartoon run here, huh?
Yeah, this one I really liked. Like, I need more Jetsons in my life.
Is this going?
It's Gold Key. The Jetsons to me are timeless, like the Flintstones. Like, I think it has an appeal for an adult as well as a kid. I don't. It's like it has themes and stuff that I don't know, everybody can relate to. But the
Yeah, I mean, they
Jets.
were primetime cartoons originally. Yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorites of all time, as far as between that, the Looney Tunes, and these two, I loved cartoons. This is when cartoons were my, I don't know, they that I was in my peak as far as like wanting to watch these. And the Jetsons, they were cool. And I one of the things that every episode sort of centers around George, 'cause he's the one that like instigates everything. And this comic book was issue 29 from 1969.
Now, do you own this one then?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was going to say, I don't know how you'd read it otherwise,
Well,
but.
this came from the Cowabunga thing too, like
Oh, cool.
the two long boxes of funny books, basically. I wanted more Jetsons, but he didn't have a lot. I ended up getting a lot of like Roadrunner, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck. I got quite a bit of. Just one or two Pink Panthers. That's what I really wanted, because I love the Pink Panther. I gotta start watching. I bought the DVDs. I gotta watch the cartoon. I just bought the Tarzan cartoon, which I'm looking forward to digging back into, especially that I'm into the Tarzan right now. But this is called the Folks Singer Swinger, and what makes this awesome is Judy's in a band, a trio, and they're singing, and George thinks it's atrocious. Like, he's like, God, I wish that my daughter got some of my abilities, because she's terrible. She's an awful singer. And his wife Jane is like, she's beautiful. They're gonna compete in this contest. He's like, we have to go to this talent contest? I'm gonna be so embarrassed. And they go and they sing, and he's like, oh my God, people are clapping. They like it. I thought they were terrible. And some guy comes from the Ed Sullivan Glum show. The one thing about the Jetsons is they would take like contemporary names and they would twist them.
Yeah, just like they did in the Flintstones too,
Yeah,
right?
they did that in the
Yeah.
Flintstones too. So this was like Ed Sullivan, and they want to get the band on the Ed Sullivan, and George is, he passes out. He's like, my daughter's horrible, and they want her on the show. So he's like trying to teach these girls to sing because the award is $500. I don't know how $500 could be a lot of money in the future, but I guess it was back then. And he's training them, and the other girls are like, we don't want to learn from you. We're doing fine on our own. This is fun, and you're making us miserable. And Judy goes to sleep, and he wakes her up, and he's like, nope, we're going to train all night because you got to be perfect to win this money. Well, she trains all night and loses her voice. So she's crying. Her dad is awful. He made her train all night. Now she can't be on the Ed Sullivan show. So he's like, he sees the $500, and so he dresses up in a wig and goes as his own daughter and shows up. And the other girls are like, we want no part of this. This is ridiculous. We're not gonna go on stage with you. Well, the stage promoter pushes him on stage, and he's there dressed as a girl, and he plugs his guitar pretty much into the electrical socket instead of the amplifier, and he's like, he's like shocking the hell out of himself. And everybody's like clapping. This is incredible. He invented a new dance. This is awesome. And everybody's like going nuts. And they say, well, the winner of the show is George, because he invented a brand new dance that everybody is catching on to. And he won the $500. The one thing you'll understand about the Jetsons is Spacely Sprocket never pays this guy very good. So one of them is like, we need to cut back on your spending, George, because we don't have that much money. So now I'm going to prepare a sack lunch for you. And it's going to be this moon cheese sandwich with garlic sauce and onions. It looks like it sounds awful. But she prepares this, but I guess there's a lot of peer pressure has worked. Like everybody wants to go out to eat, not take a sack lunch. So he's like, I can't let Jane know that. I can't let the guys know that I'm taking this sack lunch. So I'm going to hide it in the bushes. Well, meanwhile, at Century Bank, there's a crook, and he steals all kinds of money from the bank, and he's being chased. So he puts the bag into the bushes. Well, his boss seems that George is putting the bag in the bushes, and says, "What on earth is he doing? What is he? Is he going to planning on barming this place because I didn't give him a raise?" And he goes outside and he picks up the bag, opens it up, and it's got Century Bank money in there. And he's like, holy crap, I should have given George a raise. He's stealing money. So he takes him into his office and he's like, I want you to turn yourself in. He said, I'm sorry for not paying you enough money. And George doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. He's like, I got this cheese sandwich in there. So he turns him in. So Spacey Sprocket turned him in, and he's like trying to prove that. Well, the crook took the bag, he took the sandwich. So when he tries to tell the cops there's another bag in the bushes, they don't believe him. They put him in jail. But luckily, the criminal opens up the sandwich and says, this is the stinkiest ass sandwich I've ever seen. And George is outside the prison, and he grabs his sheets and like ties him up. Oh, because the bars are right outside the prison, and he's like, "Hey, go out there, you know, capture him." So he got reward money. So now he's able to eat with the guys again. So that was pretty cool story. And then they had K-9 Camper with Astro and Elroy. And Elroy brings his dog to this Cub Scout thing, and he says, "You can't bring your dog." So he sends Astro home. Well, Astro won't have none of that. He wants to be part of this with Elroy. And Elroy is constantly hiding him from the camp guy. And eventually he finds out that Elroy is hiding his dog, and he says, "You're sending him home first thing in the morning for disobeying orders." And he ties Astro outside of his tent, the scoutmaster does, but he sees a rabbit. Well, Astro chases the rabbit and knocks the tent on the scoutmaster and realizes that the campers didn't put out their fire, so he puts it out himself, and he's like, "I am so glad Astro saved the day, because I wouldn't have known we would have started a forest fire." So he gets awarded and can now go to the, he could now hang out with the campers. Last but not least is Nosy But Nice with Rosie the robot. So Rosie's the maid, and she hears that George is up for a promotion, to be the lead button pusher, and she goes up to Spacely Sprocket and says, she gives him hell. She's like, "You need to give George a raise. He's a good person. He works hard." And she says, and he like kicks her out with a golf club. And later on, he invites Spacely Sprocket to the Mr. Spacely to his house for the best cooked meal. Is Sprocket's favorite meal. And she hides herself behind a veil because she doesn't want Spacely to know that she's the one that threatened his life to try to give him a raise. So she makes this incredible meal. It's the best meal that Spacely ever had. And he's like, he takes off her veil. He says, "I want to know who's responsible for this." And he sees Rosie, and he's like, "You threaten me. I can't believe what you did for Jetson." And she actually got the job of being the master of the buttons. So she's like the manager of the button pushers, and you see George is there pushing buttons at her command. So this was an incredible comic. It really had every story, even there were four stories, they all felt like I was in front of the TV watching the cartoon again. It was amazing. I can't believe how good it was. So
Yeah, it
this
sounded
was
like you really enjoyed it.
15-cent comic, from Gold Key. Cool deal.
Very cool.
Yeah, and that I think that wraps us up.
I think so. That was fun.
Yeah. So, in wrapping up, you can reach Chris Ivy at MythMakingETC on the Twitters. Thank you for changing it back, because I can always remember that. At Rob Krieger on Twitter, and I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. You can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com. Also on the Facebook page, you could follow the threads there of all the episodes we put out. And thank you for listening. Do you guys have anything else to say? Stay safe.
The only thing that I have to say is that they announced that they're closing the schools.
They did here too. 2 weeks at least.
Yeah, they just made the announcement today.
Is yours more than 2 weeks?
Right now, our own school district is just tomorrow, but we just got a phone call, and I didn't listen to it, but we just got a phone call from the superintendent. So I have a feeling there's two local school districts that are closing indefinitely. So I have a feeling that we'll hear the same thing.
Ours was 1 week, and then that leads into spring break. So it's 2 weeks, but it's 1 week of school.
I don't know. I have a feeling it's going to be a while.
But we had the bridge outbreak over here because of the woman that died. She played bridge,
Yeah.
And
This is just, it's crazy. It's absolutely
yeah.
crazy.
So be safe and
Yep.
isolate yourself. Get some Netflix. I wish I could not go to work, but I have to go to work. But so does Barb. Our jobs don't lead themselves to work from home very well.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some stuff I can do at home. Maybe I could spend half my time. I don't know. We'll see. But
Well,
be
you guys
safe
just
out
say,
there.
yeah, just be safe. Just stay safe.
Yeah. Take care, everybody. Bye, Chris.
Okay. Bye, guys.
All right. We'll talk to you
Bye,
guys.
Rob.
Take care.
See
Bye.
ya.
Take care.
Bye. There's patient zero right there. Could be. It's a rare.